open up the champagne. Pop. It's my house, come on, turn it up. Hear a knock on the door and the night begins.
Cause we done. You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR. Now here are your hosts, Nathan Zagura and Matt Wilhelm.
Hello and welcome to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm. Rookie mini camp that will commence in about 2 hours and 50 minutes as they take the field for the first time as Cleveland Browns today. The Browns announcing earlier today that 6 of their 14 rookies have come to terms and signed their rookie contracts. Everybody else will be on the field. Nothing to worry about there. And this will all get taken care of. But Corey Coleman, the first-round pick, has signed his contract. He signed, sealed, and delivered. Jordan Payton, Rashard Higgins, two of the other wide receivers, offensive lineman Spencer Drango, defensive back Trey Caldwell, and linebacker Scooby Wright out of Arizona are the first 6 to sign on the dotted line.
And I have a feeling, just being in this building, there were players that were not a part of the 6 that signed, walking with a little pep in their step, like on an agenda, not in the weight room, not in the locker room, not on the field. Like up the stairs. So there might be other guys like falling very, very soon and those contracts getting signed.
And it should be. I mean, it's not the same thing as it used to be where you were fighting for every dollar. Now it's all slotted, so there's really not a whole lot of drama. And it's just a matter of when it does get done. Now, in addition to the 14 draft picks, in addition to the 11 undrafted free agents, the team will be joined by 14 tryout players as well. And the 14 tryout players are linebacker Ryan Akler from Bluffton, kicker Andrew Baggett from Missouri, running back Jordan Canzeri from Iowa, who's 5'8", 190, linebacker Ryan Flanagan from Kentucky, kicker Chad Hedlund from SMU, so 4 kickers, offensive lineman William McGahee from Arizona State, defensive back Eric Patterson from Ball State, punter Zach Paul from Akron, quarterback Ricky Stanzi, you remember him, Ricky Stanzi, yeah, for a Big Ten guy, from Iowa, Brent Whaley, another kicker from Ohio Dominican. Running back Martez Waller from Fresno State. Offensive lineman Isaiah Williams from Akron. Linebacker Terrell Williams from Youngstown State. And long snapper Kirk Willis from Cincinnati. So those are the people that will all be there. And then in addition to that, here's how the weekend's roster. So you've got your 14 draft picks. You've got your undrafted free agents. Now there are 10 of them, 10 undrafted free agents. Dominique Alexander out of Oklahoma, kicker Brad Craddock from Maryland, defensive back Mykel Everett from Sam Houston State, tight end J.P. Holtz from Pittsburgh, defensive back Tracy Howard from the U, defensive lineman Niall Lawrence-Stample from Florida State, offensive lineman Mike Matthews, we talked to today from Texas A&M, defensive line Kyle Rose, West Virginia, fullback Patrick Ska from Georgia Tech, and defensive back A.J. Stamps from Kentucky. Who dropped off the list? There used to be 4 DBs, so maybe that's where it is.
I didn't memorize the undrafted.
No, we lost the DB somewhere.
Okay.
Mykel Everett, there used to be 4 DBs. So A.J. Stamps, Howard, and Everett. So down to 10. So 14 draft picks, 10 undrafted free agents, the 14 tryout players, and here are the first-year rostered players that will be participating as well, bringing the total to 36. Offensive lineman Connor Buffelli from Iowa. Offensive lineman Dan France from Michigan State. Tight end Connor Hamlet from Oregon State. Offensive lineman Earl Ladson from Delaware. Defensive back Tim Scott, North Carolina. Randall Telfair from USC. Terrell Watson from Azusa Pacific, who we all want to get a look at, a guy that came over with Hugh Jackson from Cincinnati. And defensive lineman Dylan Wynn from Oregon State, who was with the Browns, as you all well know, last year. So that's going to be the roster. That's what you're going to see in Berea today. That's what you're going to see Saturday, tomorrow at FanFest. And Browns fans who attend FanFest will be able to watch the entire practice from start to finish. So that certainly is going to be exciting. Coming up on today's show at 1:30, we will have Scott Petrek from the Elyria Chronicle-Telegram to give his thoughts on the rookie availability as Matt and I were out there, got to see those rookies up close, take them in, talk to them. Robert Klemko, who covers the NFL for Sports Illustrated and the Monday Morning Quarterback, he will be with us at 2 o'clock, who wrote that unbelievable article about how quarterbacks are made and really the process that goes from behind, the specialized training that starts at a very young age for a lot of these quarterbacks who made it of the 15 that were drafted into the National Football League this year. 2:30, it'll be the Friday forecast, and if we can get some of the sound from the media time, we'll get that for you as well as all the Browns rookies who were drafted were made available to the media as well. All right, Matt, rookie mini camp. The guys have walked in. They've come in the building. They got their stuff. What's that day like in terms of coming in? Because they've all kind of described it in one word. Hectic, busy, constantly on the go.
Yeah, and I think that once they walk out onto the practice field, it's going to feel a heck of a lot more normal for them because there will be, you know, media availability out of practice. But it's where they're home. They're out on the grass, the smell of the green, and their ability to go out and do what they do. And as you said yesterday, you know, some of them are going to be a little tight and want to be perfect. But those who just dive into this playbook and show the coaches the retention that they took in the classroom and show it in spurts and small little growth, even in one day, that what you saw on the film in the meeting room, you can do on the football field. Maybe not to the level that they will once, you know, the veterans come and OTAs essentially start. But then after, it gets cold tub, shower, watch the film, grab a good dinner, go, you know, maybe have night meetings. I don't know if that's part of their itinerary or not. And then go back to the hotel and just, you know, catch up with family and friends who know that you've got rookie minicamp started today and just talk about the ups and downs of your day, get a good night's sleep, and wake up ready to do it again. That's really what it is, because this is their first step in creating that monotonous, you know, day after day of being a trained dog. You're now a professional. And so this is your job. And some of these guys are getting a lot of money here, you know, very, very soon. And their ability to just develop a routine as soon as they can.
How interesting, or do you remember how different was it from the way that you were used to things being done at the collegiate level to how they were done in the NFL? What's the biggest difference?
There's a significant urgency about everything you do. The amount of information you have to comprehend in the meeting room, how quickly you have to regurgitate it back to the coach in front of the meeting room, what you see on film, you know, extract that and then regurgitate it, you know, and verbalize it back to the coach, because they're going to test you, you know, before you even step foot on the field, and then your ability to take it out to the field. I think there's an urgency behind everything you do. Practices are just at a crisper pace. And I think for those guys that played at big schools, that's probably what their coach in the last 3 to 5 years tried to implement. You know, we hear a lot about what Urban Meyer does and, you know, the military aspect that he interjects into his coaches and players, but it's their ability to get so much done. And I think that's what these coaches have their own little checklist. I talked about Hugh Jackson's checklist. Where do we want to be by this date? And I know that these coaches, I would hope, have an amount of content or playbook that they want to get across to these players and have them understanding by the time that they leave and potentially come back.
When you were playing, were there a lot of guys that would come from systems? I didn't realize they did on the defense, where the defense was getting their calls from the sideline as well. So they had a playbook. Derek Kendrick was saying in TCU, we had our playbook, but every check and every basically actual final call came from the sideline.
Yeah.
How hard is that to adjust to not doing it that
way? I never played in a system that way.
Right.
I'll be honest. I'll tell a quick story. I remember playing Northwestern, and it was, I think Damian Anderson was a running back, and it was that spread offense, you know, fast paced, no huddle. And we played them at night and we ended up beating them. But I remember that moment because I felt like I was playing more than just the players on the field, because you're playing the coaches too, you know, to have them make every check for you. Every system that I've ever been in, it's on me to make that check.
Right.
Cause if I don't, you know, it's to the advantage of the offense. So I want to know those checks. I want to have watched the film to understand why we're calling this defense on this certain down and distance. So, but yeah, their ability to grasp that information is going to be amazing.
And that's going to be interesting to see, because it is going to be a real significant transition for a lot of these guys going on both sides of the ball, used to having everything called from the sideline, et cetera. What were some of your first impressions of the guys down there today?
There were some that were slightly critical and negative, just having, you know, that's why I went down there. I didn't go down there to do any video or do any, you know, any audio. I just went down there to, like, have these guys pass the eye test for me. And I know they're all of a different makeup. They all come from different backgrounds and different schools, of course. And at first glance, I would say, you know, Emmanuel Ogbah lives up to the hype of being, you know, a very physical individual. You know, I think Nassib, at first glance to me, could, if he's going to be inside, needs to put on 10 pounds, maybe 15, if that's going to be where he goes. And that'll come, in time. It's not gonna. It might not happen between now and training camp, but I'm sure they're gonna put 5 or 7 on him, you know, ASAP, and get him in the weight room with these new strength coaches. You and I had a quick conversation down there. How Ricardo Lewis, Jordan Payton, Corey Coleman, and Hollywood Higgins all have a different makeup.
Yep.
They're, none of them are essentially the same height, and they all have a different build. Higgins is the lean, you know, skinny guy. I think Payton's is the, you know, kind of bulky possession receiver. He's thick. Ricardo Lewis is just, to me, just looks like he could probably do a 360 dunk.
Do anything.
Yeah, he's just a fit, looks like a physical freak. And, of course, Corey Coleman, you know, he's the smallest of the guys, but we understand, you know, his measurables and his spark score and all that great stuff. So I think what he does is on his film. He's not going to pass the eye test because he's a little guy. But how bigger he plays on the football field is what matters.
He is thick.
And he's thick and he's put together. No, he's jacked up. You don't go, you know, first round with a sloppy body, regardless of the position. That's for sure. What else? Sean Coleman wasn't made available. He was getting treatment. You know, Kessler, I thought, handled the media very well down there. You know, he got bombarded with question after question after question. Set the valves, jacked up, you know, the way we thought he was after his pro day. And, you know, all in all, there's a buzz about these guys, and there's also an innocence about these guys. And I know many of the receivers got questions about the other receivers, and what I really hope is it's, you know, and I actually read an article about Urban Meyer that it's not so much about you knowing your teammates and playing as a team. It's you and your unit. So this wide receiver unit, because these four receivers being drafted by the Cleveland Browns in 2016 are going to be linked together for a long time, you know, hopefully here in Cleveland. But at some point, it's like, you know, if Ricardo Lewis 3 years from now, 4 years from now, signs a free agent deal somewhere else, he's going to be tracking Jordan Payton and Corey Coleman and, you know, and Hollywood Higgins and how their careers are going because they were in the same draft class, and I did the same thing. So all in all, I thought, again, as I said, there's an innocence about these guys. There's an excitement. You can see it in their eyes, and they just want to get fast forward as quickly as they can to a little bit of normalcy, which is what they know, which is going to meetings, going out to practice, and reviewing that practice.
I do think that it is interesting to see these guys, and you're right, there is some innocence to it. They're all excited to work. I thought Jordan Payton was very well spoken when I talked to him. Carl Nassib is clearly an interesting guy and a very high energy guy who is here to work, and that's all of them. They all talked about working. They all just want to come in here and work. And it was funny. So many of them, I would talk to them about some of the things that they had accomplished in college. And quite frankly, they didn't want to talk about it. They said, that's done now. And it's great. And I'm proud I had it. But now the real work begins, because all I could do now is be successful here in the NFL.
Oh, for sure.
And that's what they want.
And I mean, in some cases, they're ahead of where I was, 10, 13 years ago, whatever it was. Because, you know, I thought in some cases, because coming from Ohio State, All-American, national championship, all this other, you know, hoopla, that would, you know, be an advantage for me. But it's a clean slate. You're now, and I think the sooner that they can understand that you're fighting for or against, you're fighting for an opportunity to make this team, you're fighting for a certain position on this team, whether it be a first stringer or second stringer, because there's really no third stringers on an active 53, and you're fighting against 25 to 35-year-olds with wives, with kids, with experience in the NFL, and it's a dog-eat-dog world. So the sooner that you realize that, the better, because those vets know that you're coming for them.
Yeah.
And that's something that we talked about after the draft, because of 14 guys being added to this roster. Who's on watch? What kind of message does this send? And even, you know, Coach Hugh Jackson talking about the anxiety that might come from something like this and him wanting to nip that in the bud as soon as possible.
Yeah, it's going to be a big competition, and that really will begin next Tuesday when the OTAs kick off, and you're going to see these veterans, you know, start to jockey. And how much does that happen at OTAs? Or is it really everybody's kind of in
Not
harmony
the
there?
Week.
Everybody's in
Not
harmony?
Not the first week.
Okay.
The first week, the week will go as the coaches have it on their board, meaning the depth chart. That opening depth chart, there won't be much change in week one. But as the coaches have an opportunity, you know, step away Friday, Saturday, Sunday, watch the tape, watch all four practices again and again and again, that's where conversations are said between, you know, Coach Sutton, the linebacker coach, goes, hey, that boy Dominique Alexander can play. I got to see more of him. He got X amount of reps in those four practices. Let's bump him here. Let's move him here. And you start moving your parts, you know, to see what these guys have and how they handle, you know, essentially moving up a rung.
And for the most part, in the early part of it, they aren't going to be going head-to-head with, you know, veterans, right?
No.
In the early OTAs, because they're going to be slotted down
correct.
The depth chart enough that they
so it's
won't.
Gonna, it's gonna
except
be,
for maybe Corey Coleman and Agba,
correct.
Et cetera.
Those that you're penciled in as a one or a two, because you figure, you know, you got good depth. 67 guys were here before the undrafted and the drafted class were added to the Cleveland Browns. So 67 guys can make up, you know, a starting one and a starting two. And that's what these guys have been, you know, walking through and practicing with Coach Hugh Jackson and his staff. So the draft picks will be interjected, those that they feel like will make the immediate impact or deserve to make that an immediate impact. Everyone else is going to have to earn it. So, but yes, the threes will be vets carried over, whoever's left, some twos that are also need to play, you know, take the reps at threes with young players on this roster, and rookies competing against each other.
Starts today. They'll finally get on the field. I cannot wait to see that happen. 3:50 today. And then everybody has the opportunity to come in and see these rookies at FanFest tomorrow. Tickets still available at ClevelandBrowns.com and the Browns mobile app. We'll be back with more CBD. We'll open up the phone lines 216-578-0850. Call us up right after this.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
All right, welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily, 216-578-0850. Let us know, who's the rookie that you are most excited to see or hear about here today at minicamp? Who's the rookie that you're most excited to see at minicamp at First Energy Stadium at FanFest tomorrow? This is a big time. This is a big class. And, you know, some of the guys I talked to, Matt, were kind of overwhelmed with how many guys they're coming in with and that they hadn't even, you know, talked to them. And Hollywood Higgins even said when he got drafted, he was so fired he was going to the Browns. And one of his buddies is like, you know, they already drafted three receivers. He was like,
huh?
What? He's like, I don't care. It's more motivation. He said in his bio, he wrote the number 18 and the number 178. He was the 18th receiver taken pick 178 overall. And he's like, that is motivation every day because I'm going to prove everybody wrong that passed on me.
And that's a great mindset. And we've heard that story before, you know, of guys in the first round. I think maybe even Teddy Bridgewater, you know, was a guy, or Derek Carr was one of those guys from the draft that, you know, almost every team passed on me one time. I'm going to make them pay. And I love that mindset, and that's his personal motivation. I just hope, you know, I hope he comes in, as it seems, ready to compete, learn this offense. And I think for a lot of these guys, simply because minus Corey Coleman, the three other guys that we took are fourth and beyond. And I think as we have more draft analysts on this show, we're talking to Andrew Berry, it's like the concentration drop. You know, that's what he made mention of all these. All these guys are storied. Ricardo Lewis was the one with, the, you know, the concentration drops. I want to start to see, and we heard Ricardo talk about being dedicated to his craft, working on the tennis ball drill, so on and so forth. If these guys have a legitimate shot of making an impact as a rookie, That concentration drop, the attention to detail, running the routes at the right depth, at the right speed, catching the football, you know, winning the football away from their body, making the contested catch, are all the things that I want to see, because those are going to happen, you know, pads or no pads, is the contested catch. Maybe not so much, you know, maybe with a vet, but I know that if Ray Horton and the defensive coaches are motivated to really dive into this scheme and to have it come across as successful, to get these guys to continue to buy in, they're going to be sharks on the back end that's going to say, no passes completed on us.
Yep.
So it's going to be, you know, very competitive between a defensive backfield that I feel has a lot to prove, even with Joe Hayden, but I know we're going to partake in practice without him. They have a lot to prove, and guys need to step up. So they're going to have young, hungry wide receivers with fresh legs to go against each and every day.
And those are going to be the battles, because not only do you have young, hungry wide receivers, you have a lot of young, hungry DBs that are fighting to make this team. Guys that have been picked recently. I mean, other than Hayden and Tremont, there's not a lot of experience at that cornerback position on this team. You know, you look at 2 years ago, it's only Justin Gilbert's third year in the league. He's got to fight for, I think, given his contract, he's likely to be here.
Yes.
But on some level, you know, he's got to fight for his spot on this team. I don't think anything is certainly going to be just out and out handed to him at that spot. You've got Pierre Desir, who was a fourth-round pick 2 years ago, that's going to be fighting for his spot. Kaywan Williams, undrafted 2 years ago, he's going to be fighting at that spot. Charles Gaines, only in his second year, going to be fighting at that spot. You know, we talked, Trey Caldwell's a rookie. These guys, this is a young, young, young cornerback room. Maybe that really the guy with the most experience after you get out of, you know, Hayden and Tremont Williams is Jamar Taylor, who's going to be a fifth-year player, out of Boise State, who was a former second-round pick, but he's fighting and is new with this team. There's not a lot of experience in that secondary. So you're going to have young rookies going against young corners, and you're going to see a lot of who's going to step up and who's going to win those battles and make this team.
You definitely are. And I think the one thing that I look for is, and knowing Tremont Williams, is he's not the vocal leader. And I can't say so much that Joe Hayden really is either. So we'll have, you know, the absence. And I wouldn't be surprised if Raheem Moore, you know, a vet, you know, high aspirations as well, you know, coming to the Cleveland Browns via free agency, that if he doesn't assume some type of leadership on that back end to be vocal. Because if you know, every room has to have one. And when you don't, and I'll just say, like, the offensive line, don't really have that screamer in the room. You need one of those guys, you know, because there's sometimes you just need, hey, if I got the wick up my, you know what, sometimes I got to have somebody to light that wick, you know what I mean, to bring the dynamite out in me. Otherwise, you get comfortable and you're just going through the motions. And we have that in Hugh Jackson. We have that in these coaches. We need guys to step up in each and every room to be that leader and the voice of that room.
Yeah, and on the offensive line, you wonder if Joel Bitonio, now in his third year, he's a guy that you would think could perhaps start taking on some of that responsibility and some of that role for this team in that room, especially because he's a guy that's going to be counted on to play at a very, very high level. That's what he's got to do. But this wide receiver room, when you talked about it, they all look different. I mean, their bodies, all four of them have different bodies. Ricardo Lewis has the body that looks like that's exactly what an NFL receiver should look like.
Yep.
Higgins, as you talked about, a little bit thinner, but a guy who carries himself with a lot of swagger. Peyton, thick, well-built. And Corey Coleman, the explosive athlete, not the tallest, but also doesn't look small. He doesn't look as small as people would, you know, are immediately, oh, well, he's too small. He certainly does not seem to be too small. Those are going to be some very interesting battles. And you talked about Raheem Moore. You know, does he have to beat out Jordan Poyer before he can take on that vocal role?
No. As long as it's competitive. If they're competing, if Poyer is 1A and Raheem Moore is, as long as he's 1B, Raheem Moore can be a vocal leader. If it's Jordan Poyer is a 1 and Raheem Moore is a 2, might be tough for him. Based on his makeup and his personality, he may be vocal simply because he's a vocal individual. And he'll fall into that role. Because I don't essentially believe Ibrahim Campbell in his second year, not going to be a vocal guy, you know, very cerebral player. What he does is his talking. Jordan Poyer, given his experience and the opportunity.
He's kind of a quiet guy.
Correct,
too.
Quiet guy, but his opportunity and experience that to play in the absence of Tashaun Gibson is what speaks for him. You talk about Tremont, we talked about Hayden, you talked about the young guys. You're not getting a voice out of Pierre Desir, you're not getting a voice out of Justin Gilbert, you know, so. It's a process of elimination, but somebody's got to be that guy. And I said it, every room needs that alpha. That alpha is watch, not, you know, don't listen to what I say, but watch what I do. And then they earn that voice where you pay attention when they talk.
It's going to be interesting. By the way, Sir Andrew Gribble letting us know that Kenya Dennis from Missouri is the defensive back who was the 11th undrafted free agent signing who is no longer on the Cleveland Browns roster. 216-578-0850. Our guy G.I. George says, I don't want to see one rookie more than another, but I'm most intrigued by the wide receivers. Hashtag eclectic. I am too. I think that that is going to be a lot of fun to watch, and I think them going against those DBs, those one-on-ones are going to be fun to watch.
They are going to be fun to watch.
I like one-on-ones.
I want to see the one-on-ones with when the vets during OTAs.
When the vets and the rookies are going head-to-head.
For sure. Okay, if you're such a vet, take me to school. When you can't cover me, that means I own you.
Are those done ones versus ones, two versus twos, three versus three, or on those do they mix it up a little more in the one-on-ones?
It all depends. I think that's coach's preference.
Okay.
I've always done, a one should want a one. a two should want a one.
Yeah, everybody should want a one.
Everybody should want a one.
Yeah.
You know, so, because otherwise, you know, you'll find, and I found this, you know, Quentin Jammer in San Diego, when we wouldn't go ones, ones, you know, and you just basically whoever you match up against in line, is they're just going to own a young, inexperienced wide receiver. And it's and they're not getting anything from it, and neither is the wide receiver. So you go good against good.
Yep.
And that's when you get better.
That's when the Browns will get better. We will be talking Browns and his impressions of these rookies. You heard some of ours just now when we talk with Scott Petrek from the Elyria Chronicle Telegram. That's coming up next. Don't forget, call us up 216-578-0850 here on CBD.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
And we are back. Remember, Fan Fest tomorrow at First Energy Stadium. Matt will be there. I will be there.
I will.
Hall of Famers will be there. Over 20 of the Browns will be there. All the rookies will be there. Sashi Brown will be there. Andrew Berry will be there. Swagger, he will be there.
Chomps.
Chomps will be there. Combine drills will be there. Food will be there, beverages, anything. A locker room sale, that's actually probably one of the coolest parts of the whole thing. The locker room sale. So go get your tickets right now. ClevelandBrowns.com, the Browns mobile app. The earlier you get there, the better, so you can get the autograph voucher so you know exactly whose autograph you're going to get. You're not just waiting in line. They'll have it all structured. You'll know exactly what you're going to get, but get there early so that you can get those tickets. We are very happy now to be joined in studio by Scott Petrek from the Elyria Chronicle Telegram. And Scott, obviously today a big day for the Browns as they open their rookie mini camp with the biggest group of rookies I think anybody can ever imagine or ever remember. What are you looking forward to seeing from those guys out there today?
Yeah, you know, number one would be Cody Kessler. I just like to see a quarterback live, see how the ball comes out of his hand, how big the arm is, you know, and people have questioned just how big that arm is. So I'm looking forward to going out there, see, you know, there's a little breeze, see how he handles it, how he throws it.
Well, you also have to be paying attention to the one of, or four of the many weapons that we've added, the wide receiver. So not only is Cody Kessler going to be watching the ball, but on the other end, on the receiving end, you know, the impacts that Corey Coleman should be penciled in as a starter, but the other three guys on how they match up and what they can do to help this football team.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. And we just saw him. You know, we got to interview him, and you can see all the different body types that the four guys have. And I want to see how Al Saunders just walked by a couple minutes ago, how he coaches those guys, because
it's the best.
We saw him at veteran minicamp, and he is unbelievable. So I'm really looking forward to seeing how he interacts with these rookies. And you know they're going to pick up things right away day one that's going to help them in their careers.
What were your overall impressions? Well, I know they did the defense and the offense. Let's stick with the offense. You were talking about the receivers. What are your overall impressions of that group?
Yeah, well, not to be quarterback-centric, but I spent a lot of time with Cody Kessler, and just an impressive guy, you know?
Yeah.
And he's got a bigger stature, I think, than you would think if you looked at just 6'1 and a quarter, two, whatever. He's got broad shoulders.
Yeah.
He's kind of a bigger guy.
He looks
guy
bigger.
Than
yeah. yeah.
Looks and there's some guys that aren't. You know, I mean, Johnny was a guy that you go, oh, my God, he's small. This guy you don't get that impression. I like the way he handles himself. I just talked to his USC coach the other day and just raved about him and said how much he loved him. And then, so I asked Cody about it, and he kind of compared him and Hugh Jackson a little bit, said they both are going to coach you really hard. And he likes that. And he said during the walkthrough, Hugh Jackson had 20-pointers for him just going through the walkthrough. And he said that's what he looks for. And one of the things at USC was Clay Helton said that he thinks this is such a good fit for Cody because of Hugh Jackson's system. And it's got some West Coast principles. And for a guy that doesn't have the biggest arm but is good on accuracy, gets the ball out of his hands, he thinks it's going to be perfect for him. So I like talking to him. And Corey Coleman was a good interview too. You know, the guys, he comes across well, bought his mom a car, he's going to buy her a house. And I talked to Seth DeVal, the Princeton tight end, you know, the converted receiver.
Guy's a beast.
Yeah, he is. I mean, he's a big dude. You know, and Princeton guys are fun to talk to. He doesn't come across snooty or anything like that. Plays guitar. So you know, I like talking to a lot of these guys.
Scott, one thing we haven't been able to talk to you about is you add these 14, you know, productive college football players, but there's still also some of them very, very raw. How much onus do you put on Hugh Jackson and the staff that he put together and their NFL experience to really mold these guys into football players year one, and then also project how they'll impact the Cleveland Browns in 17 and 18 as well?
Sure. That's huge. And I think that's one thing that gets overlooked. You know, we talk so much about, oh, he's a draft failure and the GM gets all the blame for it. Well, the fact is the coaching staff is responsible for taking the talent they're given and improving them. And I think if you look across the league at the best teams, and they've had solid coaching staffs or stable coaching staffs, the Belichicks and the Tomlins and the Harbaughs, and they develop guys. And they're not always first-round picks or second-round picks. They find guys and develop them, and it's not just all talent. And I think that's one of Hugh's selling points and one of his staff's selling points. And I'll go back to Al Saunders again. If you look at a guy like him, you would have confidence that he's going to help develop these receivers, sure, whether or not it's Corey Coleman or Rashard Higgins. And I think the same thing goes for Hugh and the quarterbacks. And I asked Jimmy that at the announcement about the high school fields the other day. Why do you have trust that Hugh – you know, Hugh asked everybody to trust him when he drafted Cody Kessler. Why do you trust him? And he said he has a track record, and I like how he coaches these guys on the field. And we saw it with RG3 during veteran minicamp, and that's going to be huge because these guys aren't just going to be good pros if they stay at this level. They have to continue to get better, and the coaches play a giant role in that.
Talking with Scott Petrak from the Elyria Chronicle-Telegram, you talked about Al Saunders, and Jordan Payton shared a note with me that he said when he drafted him, he said, I gave your college coach Jim Mora his first job, and now I'm giving you your first job. And he said they all seem to rave about him. But you talked about Coleman being a good interview. What were your impressions of Peyton Lewis and Hollywood?
Yeah, you know what? I like those guys. I didn't spend a ton of time with them. But, you know, when you look at the draft class of receivers, you know, everybody focuses on Coleman. I think they got a couple of steals late. I really do. And Higgins and Peyton, I think those are two guys that yep. could have an impact early. I love the production. People, and I talked to people in Colorado who raved about Higgins. So
I like him a lot.
Yeah, you know, and I think that's important because you're not going to hit on everyone, and that's why they got the 14 picks, and that's why they took four receivers. But you just increase your chances of hitting. And, you know, I'm not sure production always translates, but I like the production at receiver because I think that does translate to the NFL.
Scott, just to focus on the defense, you obviously Emmanuel Ogbah, the 32nd pick, Carl Nassib in the third round, and then you had Schobert and Scooby Wright, three picks from being Mr. Irrelevant. Right. And just overall, how much do we expect to see out of them at this rookie minicamp? And then what types of roles can you see at least Schobert and Scooby playing for this team?
Yeah, I think Schobert is going to be more outside. I know he's not prototypical size, but I think that's what they have in mind. Schobert could rush a quarterback last year, obviously, with Wisconsin. And Scooby's going to be your inside guy. I think he could be a special teams demon. You know, he ran a slow 40, doesn't have the longest arms. And I think, you know, maybe if you play him 80 snaps a game, that would show up. But if you're just using him to run down, or mainly using him to run down on kickoffs and punt coverage, he could be a beast. You know, I think back to the Blake Costanzos that were here. You know, guys that didn't play on defense a ton but made an impact on special teams. And he's a good dude to talk to, you know. I spent a lot of time talking to him. And just you could see the love of football. You can see that he's always been an underdog. He said he only had one Division I offer from Arizona. So it's not a big blow to be drafted in the seventh round. Sure. He still thinks he can succeed. And I did talk to Ogbah, who it's going to be a transition playing 3-4 on the outside. He said the first time he really did it, dropped it all, was at the combine, but he got early rave reviews at the combine. And obviously, I don't think the Browns are going to drop him a ton.
No.
But you need
no.
to be able to do that once in a while. And the key is, can he come off the edge, you know, and get the quarterback? And he showed at Oklahoma State the athleticism to chase guys down. You know, when he opens it up, he can really open it up. So I'm looking forward because obviously, pass rush. Just like receiver on the other side of the ball, they identified the need to improve the pass rush, and it starts with those guys and Carl Nassib, too.
What did you think of Nassib?
I'll tell you, he's got a personality.
Yeah, he does.
I talked to his D-line coach at Penn State who said before the game he would march up and down the sideline just screaming profanities. And, you know, I asked Carl, and he goes, yeah, but he didn't really want it. He goes, well, I'm Catholic, I don't swear. I go, come on. I said, I'm Catholic, I swear a bunch. He goes, yeah. He goes, it's legit. He goes, that's accurate. He said that's like how he flips a switch. You know, he listens to Eminem and then he goes and marches the sideline and screams just expletive after expletive. So he's just a funny guy. Ogbah said that what he's learned in its couple of days is that Nassib is a comedian, and you wouldn't know it because he like every answer
everything's
I got,
deadpan.
Every answer I got from him was like five words.
Yeah.
But he's got this look in his eyes that you could say, okay, I kind of see the devil behind him. So I'm looking forward to seeing, you know, just kind of getting to know him better. And he said they'll play him at end and he needs to bulk up a little bit. But, you know, the guy could get to the quarterback last year, and that's, you know, obviously that's what these guys need.
And, Scott, when you add 14 players, a 15th via trade, you sign, what, 9 or 10 undrafted 10. Free agents. I've been a veteran before with multiple draft classes coming in. You're always concerned about, you know, my job on
sure.
this team. Are there guys that, you know, immediately pop into your head when you think who's in jeopardy, either because of their age, because of production, or because of their contract?
Oh, you know, yeah. You know, I mean, you start at receiver, you know, and – they didn't get enough production there last year. and we saw Travis Benjamin leave. You know, I think Hawkins has a different skill set than these guys, so I don't think he's in any danger as long as he stays healthy. But, you know, I mean, Hartline's getting closer to 30. You know, Taylor Gabriel kind of dropped off last year. I mean, those are two guys I think that have to show something in camp to stick around. Then the other side of the ball, you just see, okay, they drafted Agba, who looks a lot physically like Paul Kruger. That doesn't mean they'll get rid of Kruger right away, but, you know, it's kind of same position. So I would worry about Kruger. If at the end of training camp, Agba looks like he's going to play the majority of the downs, then you save $6 million. And, you know, maybe Desmond Bryant, you know, if Carl Nassib fits that role, and I think he's going to be a little more of a project because he needs to gain weight and he hasn't played that 3-4 end. But down the road, that seems like a guy that could lose out to a guy like Nassib.
It's going to be interesting to see, and obviously they have 3 days, and then they'll have a day off where they begin the OTAs when the veterans come in there. But we were talking earlier about the competition with these young wide receivers, and if you really look at the secondary, other than especially the corners, other than Hayden and Tremont, they're all young guys who have a lot to prove as well, and those are going to be some of the interesting battles.
No, you're right, and that was one of the spots in the draft where I thought they would address it higher. I really did, and then they went out and made the trade for Jamar Taylor, and so he adds into that mix. You know, and I thought they needed to improve there, and maybe Taylor is the guy, you know, you find kind of a dime in the rough, who, you know, former second-round pick, hasn't played in a while, or, you know, didn't play a lot in Miami. But you do. You have Charles Gaines and Desir, who, you know, they showed a little bit, but not enough for me to say, okay, they're the guy moving forward. So that is going to be an interesting spot because we don't know when Joe's going to be ready, right? Tremont's getting up there. I mean, the fact is, in this league, you need to be able to cover, and they got a couple new safeties coming in. So there's a lot of transition back there, and that might be the biggest question mark on this team, you know, 3 months away from training camp.
Yeah, and speaking of training camp, Scott, and it's the last question for you, I know you got to run, is how different, based on what you've heard out of Hugh Jackson, and essentially every regime wants to change the culture, how different do you expect training camp to look or feel with Hugh Jackson and his staff?
Yeah, I think there will be a noticeable difference. You know, and we've had this in the past, oh, you can see the difference between, you know, Pettine and Chud, or Chud and whoever. And I didn't always buy into that, but you know, I'll tell you what, the first snap of rookie or of the veteran minicamp a couple weeks ago, you know, Hugh was screaming. I had to get him re-huddled because they screwed up how they huddled. I just think you're going to see better tempo, which we've seen already in the few practices we've gotten to watch. And I thought that was something that lacked during training camp last year. I thought there were lulls. I wasn't sure they got as much accomplished as they needed to get accomplished. And I think Hugh and his staff have that enthusiasm and that energy that will kind of, that will speed things up, and I think you'll see more stuff get done.
Yeah, they've got energy. I mean, off the charts, the enthusiasm you talked about, and they've got 120 more years of NFL experience than the previous staff, so they know what they want to get out of these things, and they know how they think they can best accomplish that. Other than, let's say, the big name guys, who's an under the radar guy that you're really looking forward to seeing at this rookie minicamp?
Yeah, you know, Mike Matthews. How about the undrafted guy? You know, we all know his name because of Uncle Clay and Dad Bruce. I spent some time.
He was the only undrafted guy who got his own spot, by the way, today.
That's true.
To meet with the media.
Thing right there. Yeah, we wanted to talk to him because he's got a good story and he's got a big name. But, you know, he thinks he deserves to play in this league. He says he doesn't play football because his family plays football. He plays for the love of the game. You know, and I think he's a guy that he thought there was an opportunity here. That's why he signed here, because he thought it was the best opportunity. And that's because center is somewhat uncertain. You lose Alex Mack. Cam Irving's going to get that first chance, but the Browns brought in somebody to challenge him. And, you know, two different body types. But, you know, the guy's got the pedigree. I'm looking forward to seeing exactly what he can do.
And there's no true backup center on this roster. I mean, he really will be the other true center on this roster.
Right. You would have to make a switch. You'd have to move John Greco over there, which, you know, they tried a couple years ago, and they didn't like it because it shifted so many positions. So I think it's going to be Cam and this guy behind him. And, you know, everybody expects Cam. I mean, he was a number 19 pick in the draft. But at least he knows there's a young guy who's eager right behind him. So you probably get the best out of Cam.
One of the guys that I'm looking forward to see who's going to participate in this camp is Terrell Watson, the running back who came from Cincinnati with you off of their practice squad. What are your impressions of him, and what are you looking to see from him?
Yeah, you know what? I've not noticed a ton of him, but we know that Hugh likes him, and he likes the running back core. I mean, I've heard you guys talk about it, and that was one of the things that came out of the draft, obviously. He didn't like the receivers, and he liked the running backs enough not to go get one. I mean, there's nothing more clear than that. So, you know, I think Duke and Crow can be a good 1-2 punch, but they need that third guy, whether it's Glenn Winston or whoever else. So I'm looking forward to seeing the next depth at that position, because that's going to be huge. We know Hugh wants to run the ball. He wants to take pressure off whoever plays quarterback, RG3. You know, you got to transition all these young receivers. So if you can run the ball a lot, and we know Hugh likes to do that, at least it gives this team a chance to be competitive.
One thing that we talked about yesterday is now that May 12th has come, anybody who signed as a free agent wouldn't count against the compensatory pick program. So the Browns could add some veterans. Do you think they will do that? And if they were, where would you do it?
Yeah, it would have to be the right fit, you know, because they're not looking to get older. You know,
right.
We saw that by who they cut or who they didn't re-sign, the fact that they didn't sign a whole lot of guys in free agency. So it'd have to be a guy kind of in that 27, 28-year-old range. But I would go back to secondary. You know, I think that's a place that you can add depth at safety and corner, and a guy has a chance to come in, compete, and win a spot, win some playing time early. That would be the position that jumps out to me, and maybe add another inside backer, although I think they have some depth there now with DeMario and, you know, Kirksey coming back. Scooby Wright gives him a chance. Maybe Schobert plays in there some. So secondary would be the one spot for me that I'd focus on.
Scott, thank you so much for the time. Looking forward to see you out of practice as you get to see these rookies for the first time as Cleveland Browns today.
Yeah, it should be fun. Thanks, guys.
You got it. When we come back, we'll open up the phones, 216-578-0850. Who or what are you looking forward to seeing today and certainly tomorrow at FanFest when the Browns rookie cap practice will be open to the media? Robert Klemko still coming at the top of the hour. Friday forecast in hour number two here on CBD with Segura and Wilhelm on ESPN 850 WKNR.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Segura, Matt Wilhelm, and Dino is in today for Jason Gibbs, who's out here in Berea covering Browns rookie minicamp. Dino, what are you looking forward to see the most from these rookies?
I'm not going to lie. I want to see these wide receivers.
Me too.
I'm just, you know, the thought of the Browns having some playmakers now. Young playmakers, raw playmakers, but I'm excited to see what they can do. And, you know, Nathan, the other thing to me is, and Cody Kessel, I guess, talked about it today. He spent time with Corey Coleman in the build-up to the draft. I'm interested to see if they've got some chemistry that will kind of show itself before, you know, we really even get into training camp situations and minicamp situations that'll help out.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I agree. The one thing that I might have a little concern about once the vets come in is, you know, is Cody Kessler. He has to settle in with someone else besides Corey Coleman and develop rapport with all those guys, simply because I would think Coleman's going to start running with the ones once the OTA start on Tuesday.
Yeah, he's going to have to get ready to do some work with RG3, and maybe the Baylor connection will help there, Josh McCown as well. But I think these receivers, yeah, that's going to be a lot of fun to watch, and hopefully we'll have like a pretty good idea early on what we're getting from these guys. That's what I hope that you can see it, you know, that you can get comfortable with these guys pretty quickly.
Yeah, and I really do think they're going to be given the coaches will give these guys the best opportunity, and this is not from an entertainment standpoint at all. Coaches want to showcase these guys as they believe them to be, which means if Corey Coleman's going to be either my deep threat or my crosser guy, you know, Higgins is going to run these types of routes. We're going to see them in these settings so that coaches can go, okay, that's what I thought. He can do that really well. So I can build off that and expound it into, you know, an accent, you know, route tree per se. You know, every wide receiver has to be able to run every route. Every wide receiver should be able to line up everywhere as a professional. But as you said, Coleman's going to play, you know, what, the X, and Higgins or Peyton are going to play, you know, the Z, and so on and so forth. They should be, those guys run a certain type of route.
Yep.
I want to see them do that.
I want to see them do it all.
Yeah.
I want to see everybody. I think Coleman, I wonder if we're going to see Coleman. I think we'll see Coleman on one side, and I think we'll see Higgins and Peyton mostly on opposite, and it'll be interesting to see what they do with Ricardo Lewis. You know, if they're going to have, will Higgins and Peyton and Lewis cycle through all the positions? Will Coleman stay at just the X? Will they move him through all the positions? What the kind of utilization is for him, and just how natural they look. How natural they look catching the ball. Are they catching it with their hands? Do they look, how good are their routes? All that
it
stuff.
Should
I think
look
will be
crisp.
We certainly
I would
hope
think,
so.
But I read a great article, and I don't remember who wrote it for ESPN.com, you know, last weekend, or about this time actually, it might have been Monday following last weekend's, which was like the first wave of rookie minicamps. And it was all about the, as I talked about, the pace of practice, the amount of information they're having to process over, yep, over a couple of days. And then lastly, and we talked about it early in the week when I was kind of referencing the same article, is all these guys have been doing combine training. We talk about in training camp, can we get into football shape? Well, they're going to be asked to do football stuff, and they're going to need to be in football shape. So don't be surprised if these guys' legs get heavy and the coaches are going to push them, not to break them, but push them to a limit, and then they're going to taper back knowing, hey, I've got to have these guys ready to go come Tuesday. So they're going to have a couple days, you know, maybe all day Sunday and Monday to kind of get their legs back underneath them to be ready to roll and have, you know, a little base on them come Tuesday.
Absolutely, and we'll see how they respond to that condition, because every veteran was in here and said if I had one piece of advice to give them, it would be get in shape.
Yes.
Because they are going to bring it, and they're going to expect you to be in shape right out of the gate. All right, let's go to Jim in Elyria. Jim, welcome.
Yeah, I think you guys are spot on with the receivers. And also to that point, because I think, you know, they acknowledge that that's a need position, that the guys are going to have a great opportunity to play this year. So
yes,
that's why I'm also interested to see what, you know, they can do, because they're gonna maybe have a chance. And I wanted to ask Matt, you guys were talking about the lines and the individual lines. I remember, I think it was Trev Alberts was talking years ago about how when he was a rookie and he got to Indy and they would do the lines with the running backs, and the veterans would look at the running back line and count down to where Marshall was, and then they would like tell the rookie, hey, you're switching with me, because they knew where he was. They didn't want to go against him. Did that ever happen to you, or did you see that happen in your days?
Oh, absolutely. And absolutely. And I mean, I think in some cases, you know, when LaDainian Tomlinson was in line and I knew that I was kind of in line, if I wasn't ready to embrace being embarrassed or potentially covering, you know, an MVP type of caliber player, I was like, hey, bro, go ahead, man. Yeah, you want to get it? Because a vet, as a young player, a vet thrives in that one versus one situation. So a vet wants to step up and cover LT because they've covered guys like that before in the National Football League. As a rookie, you're like, nah, man, go ahead. You got it. Until I feel like maybe OTA 6, 7, 8, my man-to-man skills, my one-on-ones, I'm really balling against some of the other guys. I'm ready to stand in my spot in line and go against LT. Whether he shakes me or not, it's going to be a learning experience. But if I D him up, that's, you know,
it's going to open some eyes.
That's a strike, you know, on the pro side when it comes to how coaches feel about me.
Right, that's going to open up some eyes in a major way. All right, we'll take a break now. When we come back, Robert Klemko will be our guest. Wrote a great article for Monday Morning Quarterback about the making of quarterbacks. And we will have that for you when we return right here on CBD.